Do not be defined by your worst moment. The worst thing that can happen is you going, owning that bad moment and going, this is what I happened. All I can do is get better.
If you don't enjoy what you're doing, even winning becomes unenjoyable. Winning doesn't guarantee happiness, and losing can't steal it from you.
Can you talk to me how important it is to make goals, even though you don't love to make them?
No, I think making goals are really important. I think basing your happiness on achieving those goals is really dangerous.
You were listening to the Mindshift podcast. My name is Aaron McManus, and I'm here with my dad, Earl McManus. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm still in Costa Rica. I'm hoping I can be home by tomorrow morning, but I wanted to take some time and have this conversation today on Mindshift.
Amazing. Well, I'm glad we're able to do it. I don't love these online Zoom podcasts. I like being in the room with you better, but I'm very excited.
Me too.
I'm very excited the surgery went well, and I'm very grateful that we get to do this. So if you're listening to the podcast right now, if the audio quality is a little different, we're on an online streaming thing called Riverside. So we're recording this podcast in two different places. I'm in Mosaic's building in Hollywood, and my dad is in an undisclosed location in Costa Rica.
This is like our third or fourth hotel. And for everyone who's just wondering, they had to drill a hole in the bone in my eye socket and reattach the ligament of my eye. So it was reconstructive surgery and lots of fun. And it's you know what, if I just say this, it's incredible the relationships that you end up having, because what happened is I was doing a Zoom call for the arena. And I think that's what it was. And one of the doctors here in Costa Rica actually saw my face. He texted someone he knew and said, can you get me a hold of Earl McManus? I noticed his eye has a condition. I can fix it. And what are the chances of having a relationship connection where one of the best surgeons in this particular field happens to to be watching one of our conversations on leadership. And so it's really an incredible thing. He's a brilliant, brilliant surgeon. So much fun. I'm in great hands, but I wish I was in Costa Rica.
Give us a little bit of an update. Surgery went well?
Surgery, I'm going in today. They're removing the stitches. They told me, he said it was, for him, it was easy. He just did it. But the crazy thing is he showed me videos of his operating on me. So he showed me my, with my head open and the bone and the drilling. And I'm like, I don't really want to see this. There's some things I just want to remain a mystery.
So interesting. I also think it's so, like, what I do love about you so much too is like, you didn't want to do this. This is like a cosmetic surgery, but you actually needed it functionally because it
was. Well, actually, this was a reconstructive surgery.
This one was, but the initial surgery was something that for most people is cosmetic, but for you, it was actually hindering your eyesight.
Yeah.
So you had to actually get it. Your doctor was like, you need to do this. It's going to affect your eyesight even more and more. So doing this is so interesting because I love that you're so open. So many people just show up looking, different, where you're like, no, this is what's going on in my life. This is what's going on in my eyes. This is what I'm adjusting. This is what I have to fix.
Well, so far I'm only looking worse. So.
No, you look amazing. Honestly,
I wouldn't recommend this to everyone. And I
posted the photo of us on Easter wearing the suits, the Fear of God suits. And we honestly, what's so interesting too is that, like, do you remember when you first wore the Eternal suit that Jerry
3 years ago,
and how much hate we got?
Oh my goodness, I did not expect it. I was kind of shocked. I woke up the next day after Easter with so much hate from all over the place.
It was so crazy.
And then Jerry, Jerry Lorenzo was like, why would people hate on you wearing like a beautiful suit? And, cause one, I pastored, I started and pastored a black church for, 6-8 years of my life. Jerry
Which
comes from a black church.
You can't just drop that. You were serving when you were in grad school in seminary. You were serving the inner city, and then you ended up starting two churches:
a church
that was in the black neighborhood and a church that was in the Latin American neighborhood, like the Spanish.
Yeah, one was in the homeless area, one was in a black community, one was in a Latino community, And you know, when you, I was a pastor of a black congregation, maybe 99% of the church was black. You'd wear your best, even though everybody was impoverished, and even though everyone, you know, would be considered financially on the underprivileged section. Everyone always dressed up on Sunday. Everyone had at least one good suit, one good dress. And so that was the culture. And then Jerry, that's his culture. And he's like, wait a minute, you're supposed to wear your Sunday best. And so that was pretty funny. And to get so much hate for a line called Eternal.
Which is so interesting. But it was cool wearing it this year. And honestly, it was cool having some of the team came through yesterday and they were like, yo, the suits look so good and you guys look amazing. And we're so happy our team, you know, so it's just, you know, for us, it's such a different perspective. Cause I think we have to be friends with some of these people, which is fun, you know? Okay. So a couple different things. And this is kind of a recap. Did you watch the Iowa,
South Carolina finals?
South Carolina finals?
Yeah, I watched both the Iowa-Connecticut Final Four and then the Iowa-South Carolina finals. Watched them here in Costa Rica, so my announcers were Spanish. It was really interesting. I was pulled in. I was there with Connecticut and Iowa watching that game. And so all the controversy with that last foul and the last 3 seconds or something like that, which is so interesting because it was clearly a foul. And there's just no way that wasn't an illegal pick. And if they had allowed it to happen and Connecticut would have won, it would have created a controversy that there wasn't a foul called and Connecticut won. And then there's a controversy if there was a foul called and Iowa won. But isn't that just sort of like the fun of sports? Every fan gets to make up why their team should have won. And then when you watch Iowa against South Carolina, it didn't come down to a penalty because South Carolina was just better. They're just a more athletic, a taller, bigger, holistically skilled team. Some of the best freshmen I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And they're just a better team. And I just thought Iowa did a great job playing with, I think, a significant talent deficit.
It's so interesting to me, right? Because they have a few things. I reposted the clip and I sent this to you. I reposted it on my Instagram of the South Carolina coach. Is it Don Staley?
Yeah.
Which was such a beautiful speech, right? Like I love post game interviews. So I caught the last quarter or that last quarter, but I guess it would have been the last quarter, but they only go in halves. So the last like 5 minutes or 6 minutes of the game. And so I watched post game and just watching the South Carolina players, just be so happy and so, humble and such team energy, right? Like I loved it so much. Like you could just tell the culture is strong, on both sides. Like I love that they didn't pull Caitlin Clark out when they were losing. They were obviously going to lose. I think they might. Did they pull her out to put in two seniors? They might have pulled her out to put two seniors
in the last seconds. Yeah,
in the last second, because that senior hadn't been able to. There's all these balloons just happened.
Be on the floor. Yeah,
senior. Yeah, hadn't been able to play, and they put her in. So I just thought it was so honoring, and also just so much. I don't know, like just so much character to just stay on her facial expressions. She flubbed the last, she got her ball, the ball stolen on the last play, competitive play. And I love that South Carolina didn't go to score. I love that she kind of kept her cool. She was there shaking hands. So I'm like class act from like the best player in maybe NCAA women's basketball history. And then to have Coach Staley go on and shout out Caitlin Clark as the best women's player, like the GOAT of our generation. And just to speak so highly, like you just don't get that. You don't get that at the highest level sometimes. And so it was just cool to watch that happening and unfold before our eyes. We're in a cool space. Because really, like what makes sports iconic is heroes.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's like and villains.
And villains. Heroes and villains, right? Yeah. Michael Jordan, Dennis Rodman.
Yeah. Or Isaiah Thomas. Yeah.
Or
LeBron as the hero and the villain, depending on who you are.
Which year, what kind of the bet you accept on that year, you know?
Yeah. But here's the thing. The way we're talking about these games, to me, is the way they should be talked about. We didn't mention a white player, a black player. We didn't mention a white coach, a black coach. Everything didn't suddenly become racially divided. Everything isn't now a political, social agenda. You know, one of the things I always loved about sports was that, in the sense, it was colorblind, because if you're faster, you're faster. If you're better, you're better. If you're stronger, you're stronger. If you can jump higher, you jump higher. And, you know, I mean, I grew up running track in Miami, Run for Fun in Miami, Florida. And I was, you know, probably the only athlete from El Salvador other than my brother. You know? And most of our team were black from their background, whether it was, you know, Dominican or Cuban, or you know, from African descent or, directly. And very few of the people I actually competed with on the same team or against were white, simply because of the filter. You just, you know, the white athletes were not as fast, could not jump as high. And so we were competing at a whole different level. And we never thought about it as color. It was just whose time was the fastest, who could jump the highest, who could, you know, lift the most. And I think that's, to me, part of the beauty of sports, is that it's supposed to filter out all of that secondary, irrelevant data. But this didn't. This became such a white-black issue. It became so polarizing. I think it's actually more a statement of the social condition that we've been in through the pandemic, through the quarantine, and then really anything Angel Reese did or Caitlin Clark did. And I think a lot of commentators tried to make this a racial issue. And
that's the irony, right? Is that, like, and I thought it was such a good storyline. Like, she's the obviously the best player in the league right now as far as a shooter, but the best player couldn't beat the best team, right? And I loved Coach Staley's interview, man. She's just crying. Yeah. Like, it was just joy. You could just tell it meant so much to her, and like the crew around her, they were just so, it was such a beautiful, honestly, I've been so inspired by the NCAA post games on the men's and the women's side. So fun to watch. So I thought the NC State, what was his name? Is it Davis Daly? The big forward who was just had incredible like comments on joy, talking about joy and his inspiration. I thought the coach had such a great thing. She said, they asked her about like, what does this feel like and how much does it mean to you? Comparing, you know, your loss last year to now you're winning this year. And I mean, they went undefeated. Like, there's just not that many coaches that can say, I went undefeated and I won the national championship. If the only game they had lost was this game, her season, she probably won.
Yeah.
But Coach Staley says this thing, and she talks about, she says, God, she says, isn't it like, she talks about how like God will break your heart. And I loved that metaphor. She talks about, like, isn't it funny? God will break your heart.
He sounds then, like you.
Right? And then builds you back up. And I just thought it was so interesting. Like, don't ever count yourself out. Don't, in the worst moment, don't let the worst moment overwhelm all of the good that has happened in your life. And I think there's something there, right? There's a leadership thing there. There's a communication thing there. It's a character thing. Do not be defined by your worst moment. Like, if the worst thing that can happen is you going, owning that bad moment and going, this is what I happened. All I can do is get better. And she just talked about it. And you look at the stat sheet, there's 9 players that scored on South Carolina. There's only 5 that scored on Iowa. Like, South Carolina trusted the freshmen on their team.
Yeah.
They trusted the players. Right. And then Iowa had 6 girls that played, 5 that scored, and you look at it and you go, okay, they weren't as deep. And maybe it's a talent thing, maybe it's a recruiting thing, but the reality is it made a difference when it counted.
Yeah. And I think it's important to say Coach Staley is not a great black coach. He's a great coach. She's not a great women's coach. She's a great coach. Like, the moment you start categorizing people and you're actually trying to put them in a lesser category. And she's a great coach, period.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, and I think, right. I don't even, you know, I don't know. But we do. Hey, look, we talked about it on the men's side, because when we watched the Final Four or the Sweet 16, and we called it out. We said, there's too many white boys on this team. they're not gonna win this one.
And you're gonna get in trouble like Paul Pierce now.
I know. But it is isn't about race, but it is about talent and it is about ability, right? And so that's just the reality, right? There's just a different thing. So from there, I think there's some leadership things you can learn. I think that's such an incredible moment. I love that the coach, there's, you know, we have a polarizing figure like Caitlin Clark, and polarizing only because she just skyrockets it because becomes this like Steph Curry-esque shooter, you know? I think there's something special there, but I love that the coach shouted her out and talked about just giving her her flowers, giving her the credit and giving her the honor, going, you rose the league up, you know? And that's what it's about, right? Like on every level, like, yes, that you should die for the competition. But once you win, it's like it really is reflecting back and going, what is making our league successful? You know? And so I do like that about the women's league, because they're very aware that not that they're secondary to the men's league, but they don't quite draw the same amount of attendance. They don't quite draw the same amount of appeal. So when you have these hero moments, and maybe you could talk to us a little bit about how important the hero is, right? Because having these moments with heroes inside the league is now really creating, like, you got men watching. I got girlfriends all over the world that are like posting about this, going, we're going to the bar and we're going to support the game and watch the game. Like, this is cool. It's cool to watch people rally around different figures, right?
Yeah, no, it is. And Caitlin Clark's post game interview, and she talked about, you know, she wanted the legacy to be the joy that they brought and the impact they made on other people, and how her career, her legend wouldn't be based on one win or one loss. I just thought that was incredibly classy. And I think it's a beautifully healthy perspective of life. And you know, because if you don't enjoy what you're doing, even winning becomes unenjoyable. I did notice, like, when Angel Reese talked about how her life has been so unhappy even since winning the championship. And I thought, you know, that to me is an interesting, like, divide. Winning doesn't guarantee happiness, and losing can't steal it from you. And I think it's an important place to step into, realizing, oh, we think success will make us happy. We think winning the championship will make us happy. But actually what Angel Reese says is that her life has been more unhappy since she won the championship. And then in this, you have Caitlin Clark, you know, clearly sad she didn't win the championship, but doesn't seem to have her happiness diminished at all. And certainly didn't last year. And I think that's an important thing for all of us in life. Our goals are a powerful thing, but you do not have control over all the outcomes of life. You do not have control over whether you always win or lose. You do not have control whether you always succeed or fail. And so if your happiness is contingent on the outcome, you're destined for unhappiness. If your happiness is contingent on the process and the person you're becoming because of it, then you actually have a greater potential to be happy.
I think there's something so practical in that, right? It's this, what are your outcome goals? You know, like, we talk about this a lot because I'm always trying to lock you down. What are our goals? What are our financial goals? Goals. What do me and Austin need to be driving towards? And you're like, no. You know, and there's obviously obvious goals, right? We want things to succeed. We want quality to be high. We want the arena conference to be filled. We want Mosaic to succeed. We want the podcast to be listened to. We want the books to be read. But we don't, you know, maybe I'll say the book has goals. Every time the book, you read a book, I say we because it's a team effort, but, you know, there's goals. But I think the most part is the purpose is to get it out there. And so I'm very goal driven. I want world domination. I was like, I want every, you know, I sent you a screenshot this morning because Will Gridara posted, you know, Will does this thing and I love that he does it, but he, every time he flies, he goes into the airport and signs books and then posts about the books and does the story. We did that one time in LAX and I never posted about it. I took video, awesome. But then in the background of Unreasonable Hospitality, which is a phenomenal book, maybe my favorite book of this last year, if you haven't read it, you should read it. Mindshift was on the shelf. And so I sent it to you. Did you see it?
Yes, I did. You know, so I saw it.
But how, can you talk to me how important it is to make goals, even though you don't love to make them?
Well, I think making goals are really important. I think basing your happiness on achieving those goals is really dangerous. So it's a difference.
And well, we all do it to some degree. We all do it. There's seasonal goals. There's lifestyle goals. There's relational goals. There's, you know, season of life goals. People feel this when they're not married at the right time. They don't have the kid at the right time. You know, they don't have the success at the right time. I know that I've always felt like I'm unsuccessful. I haven't achieved what I need to achieve. I haven't achieved what you achieved. So, you know, can you break that down for us a little bit?
One, I think it's really helpful to have like tactical goals. You know, like short-term things that you want to change about you. Like, you know, going, okay, these are the things I want to improve in my life. This is how I want to get better. This is how I want to improve my skill set. Even if it's around, like, let's say sales. You know, so you want to sell a lot more books. And I want to sell a lot more books, but I want to grow in my knowledge of how to get the message out in a way that impacts other people. And so the outcome's connected to a growth area for me and not just an outcome goal. I'm not trying to figure out how to achieve goals outside of my own personal growth. I'm trying to figure out how to achieve goals within my personal growth and ask myself, what do I need to learn? Where do I need to expand? Where do I need to change? You know, what do I need to have a come to Jesus moment in my life and go, this is exactly the wrong person I should be, and become the person that can achieve those goals. I really do believe in that observation that wealth or success or greatness isn't nearly as much about what you achieve as who you had to become to achieve that. And so I think that's what the focus has to be, is who do you need to become? And then if that's the person you want to become and you're willing to pay the price to become that person, I think the goals become very organic to that.
You know, it's interesting. You sent me a couple clips on Instagram, I think, about a few quotes. It was a few podcasts or a few interviews. And a lot of this conversation really does feel like it's centered around The Barbarian Way, one of your books. That came out, I want to say 10 years ago, but one of
20 years ago.
Honestly, one of your best books you've ever written. And I wonder, like, do you have the rights to that book?
Well, I don't right now because my publisher just contacted me and said the 20 year anniversary is coming out. They wanted to do a republishing of it. But I kind of would like to get it back in my hands and republish it, you know.
That's right.
Myself. And some of it is because even right away, they're going, hey, we'd like to change this and change this because we don't think it necessarily matches the culture right now. And I'm like, I don't even know if I want to make those changes. And I want to still be as extreme as I was back then.
I got to give Andrew a call and we got to buy this book back. But we got to put this book out because I really do think that it's such a book for this season of life. Like Barbarian, you kind of wrote this. You know, we're going a little bit on a tangent, but I think it's interesting that you wrote The Barbarian Way, and then, you know, 10 years later or 20 years later, you wrote The Way of the Warrior, or The Last Arrow, and then The Way of the Warrior. And that's kind of like a trilogy. They kind of this, you know, you have this warrior theme throughout your writing career. And so where did that come from? Why is that so important to you? Because I feel like now there's this resurgence of no one wants soft men anymore.
Well, it's interesting because it is when I wrote The Barbarian Way, its original longer title was The Barbarian Way Out of Civilization. And the opening quote in the book is from Rocky when Mickey says to Rocky, you know, the worst thing that could ever happen to a fighter happened to you. You got civilized. And I took that quote from Rocky and it became like, in a sense, the foundational image of the book, where the most dangerous thing that happens to a man, especially in my mind, is when you have some level of success. And by success, I mean you have food, you know, you have clothes, you have a car, you know, you have security and safety, and so you become civilized. And frankly, a paycheck civilizes us. You know, a lot of times, you know, once we have a paycheck, we're unwilling to risk, we're unwilling to sacrifice, we're unwilling to venture outside. And it's really important to me that especially men always hold on to this raw essence of this primal nature of who they are. And so when I wrote The Barbarian Way, I was saying, man, hey, we've become civilized by our religion. We've become civilized by our faith. Faith becomes a noun, not a verb. It's a belief, not an action. And so I open up with the story with Robert the Bruce, and the whole kind of layout of the book is what I hear so much conversation about now with Chris Wiltz and with Jordan Peterson and with Joe Rogan and so many of these, kind of popular voices talking about how men need to rediscover what it means to be masculine, what it means to be a man. And even the whole idea of toxic masculinity, I'm like, the moment you hate something, you put the word toxic in front of it. And it's almost as if masculinity itself is toxic. And I think actually what the reality is that we have a generation of young men who are growing up without a sense of identity, because I don't know if there's a more hated class in our society than young men. And I think this cultural bias that says you should not develop your strength, you should not develop these disciplines, you should not be dangerous. And the whole point of my book is men need to be dangerous. And that you need to have so much force of power that it will require meekness to control it. And I don't want you to be out of control, but I want you to have something you need to control. I want you to have strength that will be needed for the big battles of life, for the big challenges of life. Because life is a battle. Life is a struggle. Life is hard. And if you think there's an easy path, you're going to live in disillusionment all of your life.
I love that. Wait, did you, because it's been a while since I read that book. Did you add that Rocky scene in the book?
It's the opening page of the book.
Okay, I need to go back. Actually, I need to go back and read that. I'm Googling the quote. I'm like reading the scene right now on IMDb. It's such a remarkable scene, right? And I think that does happen to any of us. It does happen to a lot of us, right? Like you get to this place where you achieve something of some type of stature or success, and then you fall apart. You lose identity. And that's the reality, right? Is that one thing that I find that you're so uniquely gifted at is creating these core values and these foundations for your character and your humanity and you as a man, that when you do achieve these things, it's just like you've been there before. You've done it, because the thing that you achieved isn't the thing you were almost searching for. It was just a product and the outcome of the consistency of the foundation of your character. And that's something that's really uniquely, I think, attributed to you, that you focus more on how you got there versus what you get when you're there.
Thank you. And I think that's actually true to the way I value life, even in terms of strength. I don't think I ever developed strength when I was young to protect myself. I developed strength to protect others. And I humble brag. I saw this social media post that said that if you can bench press 225 pounds, you're like in the 1% of 1% of all men in the world. And I was going, man, when I was 17, I was bench pressing 265. And so I don't know like what percentage of what percentage that put me in, but I weighed 155 pounds and I could bench press 265. I was bench pressing 110 pounds over my weight. And I look back and I realize like I never had this anger of wanting to hurt people. But I did have this deep sense of social responsibility of wanting to protect people. And I think the difference in The Barbarian Way is that it's not about becoming untamed and unruly so that you can have whatever you want. It's learning how to find this deep courage and passion and intensity so that you can stand against evil and stand against darkness and stand against wrong and stand for those that are defenseless and weak and need you to stand for them.
That's amazing, man. I love it. Well, this was an exciting weekend this weekend without you. It was kind of sad.
Well,
so we've been live streaming Mosaic, which has been, you know, a new feat, because we used to do it back in, like, I feel like 2015, 16, 17. Yep. And then we cut it off and then watched, because we felt like there were people, there's too many people locally that were just live streaming and we wanted to get them back in church. But we started live streaming again. So if you've never checked Mosaic out, mosaic.org/live Sunday mornings, 9:30 and 11:30 Pacific Standard Time. That's a little plug. But we've been building a team out, learning how to stream again, which has been so unique and so hard. Which is always fun. Did you watch? Were you able to watch church on Sunday, or were you guys hanging out?
I couldn't even get Wi-Fi on my iPad where we were. We just came back into San Jose. We were in the middle of nowhere. I could not get anything. It was so frustrating to me.
I wondered where you were. I was like, I haven't heard from him very much, but I did send you the link, I think. But that's exciting. So as we get to, I know we're about 6 months out from the Arena Conference, and this has been something when did we launch the Arena, Austin?
August of last year.
So we're coming up, almost, what is it? April, May, June, July, August. We're 5 months away from our 1 year mark of our launch of the Arena. And
amazing.
It's kind of amazing, man. I can't believe, like, we're kind of living in a dream a little bit. Like, it's wild. Like, just, it's been a 3-person team for the most part, me, you, and Austin. And then we've had a little bit of help with Elisa and had some friends like Dan kind of come in and help us. But me and Austin were rebuilding the website, and I was looking at it, and out of all of these speakers that spoke last year, it's absolutely insane. We got 12, 15 of the most incredible speakers. And then this year, like, it's actually wild. Like, we have a president of El Salvador, President Nayib Bukele, coming to speak, and if there's anyone to be excited about, it's that guy. But then you have Donald Miller, then you have Brennan Bouchard, then you have Ali Webb, then you have all these insane speakers. Did you ever think that we would put a conference on for business people and entrepreneurs and podcasters that would end up being at this level?
No, this has been a wonderful surprise. It's just been incredibly beautiful. And, it's one of those things where it was a huge risk. It seemed a little crazy for us to try to do it. And then it just felt absolutely right. And it was perfect. And I felt like we could create something very unique that didn't exist. And there are a lot of great conferences, a lot of great events. I just felt like we have an ability to create something a little bit more textured. And, because we add certain values that a lot of business events don't. And I don't really consider this a business conference as much as I think it's a conference for like personal development, and it's personal growth. It really is. It touches on the business world and touches on the entrepreneurial world and touches on, your spiritual journey. It's like, but it's really for people who want to be in the marketplace and have a massive impact for good. And so that's where I see the conference really has a unique place.
It's really interesting because, for the first 7 months of this, I think we were really trying to build the foundation, really strengthen it and get it to a place where if you were to buy a membership for the Arena, there's an ecosystem and there's a world of content that you can kind of engage in and live in, whether you're accessing the weekly calls or the monthly calls or not. You just have 50 hours of content that you can dive into, from communication to character to leadership to strategy to overthinking to kind of just meeting all these different needs. And it's been really cool because we've launching Art of Calm now, what was it, almost 2 years ago, has been such like a unique thing. And then for the Art of Calm, Art of Communication, to kind of grow into this thing called the Arena that feels massive in my mind. It feels like I talk about world domination. I'm like, this is the thing that does it, right? This is the thing that just spreads the word of what we're doing creatively or intellectually or even on this podcast that really makes it so unique. And I'm very excited. Very, very excited to kind of build and get ready. I don't know.
Yeah. And when you mentioned the Arena, one of the things for me, what's that adage? That people say that the person you can help the most is the person you were 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And I look back and I go, one of the most frustrating questions I would get from people in interviews was, who are your mentors? And what they meant back then was, you know, who picked you to mentor you? And no one ever picked me to mentor me. And so for a long time, that was a really like, you know, oh, open a wound. Just go ahead, open the wound again. And then finally I decided all my mentors were people in books, you know, that they didn't have to pick me. I could pick them. And that was like a shift for me, that you can have mentors even when you're not chosen. But for me, the arena is when you get asked that question, who are your mentors? Most of the time, you're powerless to choose your mentors. They have to choose you. But when you choose the arena, you're choosing yourself and saying, I'm going to be mentored. I'm going to get access to the best learning, the best thinking, and the best mental structures that anyone in the world can would access if they had been chosen. And so in a sense, I love the arena because you get to choose yourself as the person that you're going to build into. And I just think it's a really important thing. If I could help the person I was 30 years ago, I would have created a place where I could learn based on my own hunger, based on my own drive, based on my own curiosity, and have an unlimited capacity to grow. And that's one of the reasons I love the arena. And I think it's one of the reasons we're so committed to building this community.
I love it. I know I had this idea, Dad, because we've been doing the arena summits where, normally our weekly call is on a Tuesday at 10 a.m. So that prioritizes kind of the Northern Hemisphere. But when we do the call at, on the Wednesday nights, the arena summits, the Wednesday night 5 p.m. call, I kind of think we should do a thing where, because what's really unique is like Allie Webb comes on and then just gives her story for 15, 20 minutes and then really starts solving problems, giving problem solving ideas. And I wonder if we should do it like in tandem where we get her to do like something for the arena where we pick like three different people specifically for her space. And then she just problem solves for those people publicly, like on the call. And so that the summit becomes this kind of other thing where she's talking about these, different problem solving that she's doing. And then we kind of make it in a public space. I don't know. I'm just kind of vibing right now because I don't know. I woke up this morning being so excited because we have John Gordon coming the end of April, which, that guy is just a freak of nature when it comes to just positivity and positive teaming and positive leading, and speaks to every major, football, basketball coach from the college to the pro level. He just has such a reach. Bob Roberts at the Dodgers, like the manager of the Dodgers, Dave Roberts. I don't know why I said Bob Roberts. He's our manager. I'm a Dodgers fan. I think it's really interesting. So I'm like, I kind of want to figure it out. Like, we have some amazing people in the arena who have massive teams. I'm like, how do we get them to ask these questions and like let John kind of bring in the positive leading structure, culture into these different companies? I don't know. I'm just getting excited.
No, I actually really like that. I'm gonna think of something creative to do with John because we have such access to him as our friend. And so I'm gonna make it hard on him and better for our community as much as possible. And
I love
but that. One of the things, Aaron, when you were talking about that, it reminded me when I was very, very young in my spiritual journey, and I started mentoring these guys in high school. They were all seniors in high school, and I was third or fourth year in college because I had just become a person of faith. And so I invited 12 guys and to spend the summer with me, and I said we all have to pick a time where we can all meet. And because they're all working jobs and all in summer school and all doing all these other things, we met on Friday nights, I think it was at 2 in the morning, after the last one got off from work, I think at Publix or somewhere. And we would all meet in this little storefront in downtown Orlando from like 2 to 5 in the morning on Friday night, once a week. And they were self-selecting in that sense because they had to make that hard decision to show up and they couldn't miss. And I watched those guys grow so much, and they all ended up doing something really spectacular with their lives. And, you know, one of the things I hope we can do more and more and more as we keep building out the arena is creating these niche opportunities for people when they go, you know, this is the area we really need help in, or this is the area we want problem solving, or this is where we want to grow, that we can actually create some targeted niche mentoring for people along the way. And because I that experience for me was life giving for me. And I don't even know if anything I taught them was worth anything. You know, I think it was the level of commitment we all made to each other that changed us. So when you were just talking about what we could do with John or do with Allie, I just started thinking about it. We should do a few late nights. You know, we go, man, if you're serious about it, you know, show up at this time, and we're going to have a surprise guest, and we're talking about this problem or this issue. So we should create some kind of like, you know, viral rave kind of experiences in the arena.
We do. We should. We really, really, really should. With that said, I don't want to keep you too long. I just wanted to kind of get I know you wanted to do a pod this morning and get us on here and start talking. I don't know how you feel. Like, I really wish the mind shift was a morning show. I really wish this is how we woke up. Just go on for an hour, because we talk about so many different things. I think there's so many different things that we're interested in and people that we love to communicate with and talk about. You know, and I'm just grateful to have you back. Like, for me, the biggest blessing is knowing you had these successful surgeries, you're healing up, you're going to get back to normal, you're going to be better than normal, which is exciting. And I get you back because we've been waiting on so many things. Like, you know, and this is something, man. Maybe we should do a whole pod on perseverance and how to stay patient and calm. But you have an incredible ability to stay resilient when you're fighting, whether it's mental things, right? Because the physical affects the mental, and you have to be able to work out for 5 months in any proper way. And you've just done such a good job of staying healthy. And maybe you don't feel that, but I feel that. And I know you're behind the scenes, your inner workings, but how do you manage to stay so resilient?
Yeah, and they told me it'd be another 3 months before I can actually go at it hard.
Well, thank God you're naturally handsome. Me and Austin over here, we got to fight for what we got, you know?
I think we should do an entire podcast on mental tenacity, resilience, because I do think it's something that I have developed in my life, and I realize there are internal mechanisms that I do use, and that instantly begin to change the way I think and the way I approach things. And, you know, because you can feel, you can feel yourself almost like getting sucked into like depression or sucked into like just fatigue, when you're like, oh, how many more months do I have to deal with this? Or, you know, how many more times I have to deal with this? And, you know, or why, you know, why this, why, you know, why me? In fact, the surgeon here told me, hey, we researched your surgeon in Hollywood, and She's amazing. She's one of the best.
Hollywood. We don't go to no surgeons in Hollywood. Your surgeon was in Beverly Hills.
Beverly Hills. Yeah, yeah. And
surgeon in Hollywood is at the motel down the street. It's not going to work.
He said, you know, you had a great surgeon. What happened to you was one in a million. It was just unfortunate. These things happen. And you know, you can actually like go backwards to God and go, really, God? One in a million? You know, so what you're really saying is you didn't let this happen to anyone else but me. And you can actually move into a very much a victimized mentality, you know, and victimization. And I just, why me? Woe me. Life is hard. But each time it kind of flips in my head and I go, who can I relate to now? Like, whose pain can I resonate with and speak to at a level that I couldn't do before? What character trait am I having to access? You know, I mean, when you have to speak publicly with your face taped up for 5 months, believe me, you deal with ego and you deal with any level of vanity, and you have to learn how to dig deeper into a space of humility, or you're going to feel humiliated all the time. And And I actually, what happens, something triggers in my head and I go, oh, this is the positive virtue that I get to develop. I get to experiment at how much I can grow in humility. This, I get to experiment and actually grow deeper in my sense of empathy for people. And for some weird reason, I actually am finding myself exhilarated that I get to go through this suffering, that I get to go through this hardship. It's, I know it sounds crazy, and maybe it's a little bit crazy, but it's the only way I can deal with stuff like this. And it does make me mentally stronger as I step into things day by day by day.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, obviously I get to know the inner workings of your mind, and you share a lot with me. And so watching you persevere and push through this, you've always turned that why me statement into, I'm going to show you proof of God. You know,
it's true.
The answer is, like, for us, right? I think, and to me, and I think this last, I think 2023 was a journey of faith for me, right? I don't know how close or how far I was from God, but there was definitely distance, right? And so I think, you know, you talk about why me, and the blank space after where you fill in the answer is proof of God, right? Is why me. So you can show that you have a product of like the Holy Spirit, the fruit of the Spirit. Like why me? Why is my life so broken to show that you can become whole? Why is my, you know, why am I going through this physical pain so that you can show there's an eternal strength? Like, you know, like you can show joy, you can show patience, you can show calm. That is Austin drinking water behind me, by the way. I'm in his camera, he's in mine. We're back to back. But I do think it's such a remarkable thing, right? Is that we're already given the answers. And then when we're asked the question or given the ability or the prompt to show proof of the problem, that's where we break as humans, right? And I've watched you time and time again. And maybe you had like, I'm sure you had 1,000 internal moments, but I only saw one moment where you were like, man, I don't know. I don't know if this feels good. This sucks. and then you just picked it back up and went, you know, but I'm going to do this, this, and this. I'm going to counteract this feeling.
Yeah, you can't help feeling things. I think, you know, maybe there's a dividing line between feelings and emotions. I don't know how scientific that is. But I don't think you can help feeling things. I think that's the response to the environment around you and life and the challenges. But you can control your emotions. And I think that what happens is when you have feelings, you can actually give those feelings intention. And if you don't give those feelings intention, they always cause you to lose your own intention. And so I don't like having feelings that have mastery over me. And I think if there's an uncomfortable place for me, if there's a place I do not enjoy, it's when I feel like my feelings have control over me. They have control over my mental frameworks. They have control over my attitude. They have control over my perspective. And so that state of being where feelings are overwhelming and overpowering, I don't want to go there. I do everything I can. The moment I feel like feelings are taking over, to actually give those feelings intention, to give them meaning, and to direct those emotions properly. And I think that's part of the reason I think I can feel deeply without being controlled by deep feelings.
And that's such an interesting thing, right? This idea, because what you've posed is that feelings and emotions are separate. Because you're someone who does show emotion. You experience a lot of joy, you experience sadness, you experience pain and frustration, right? And happiness and all of these things. But you separate it from your feelings in a way. You don't let feelings control you. In fact, like you have your baseline and then you fill it with emotion. You know? the emotion of life, the emotion of joy, the emotion of experiencing things for the first time, this kind of fresh eyes, but you don't let it define you. And sometimes I think the feelings oftentimes define us, right? We let feelings determine our direction versus letting emotions fill the space in which you're experiencing. And that's the distinction I think you make.
Yeah, I'm not a person that's going to be, quote, in his feelings. You know, my feelings are in me, but I'm not in my feelings.
Right, right.
because you're always bigger than your emotions if you choose to be. And I think that's a part of maturity. And I think a truly mature, powerful, back to the manhood, I think mature men have mastery over their emotions and do not allow their feelings to dictate their actions, their attitudes, and or their intention.
I love it. Okay. Amazing. I think this is where we wrap up. I don't think we can top this.
No, I think we've been talking about an hour.
No,
we're in Los Angeles.
Where were we at, Austin? 45?
50.
All right, guys, this is where we sign off. Thank you so much for listening to the Mindshift podcast. And Dad, I cannot wait to see you. You get back tomorrow, correct?
I do. We catch the red eye tonight, get home on Tuesday, and hopefully I'll see everyone in the arena.
No, we'll see everyone in the arena. And guys, everybody who listens to this podcast, I want to thank you so much. We're so grateful for you. We've been on this journey for a few years now, and some of you are OG Battle Ready podcast listeners. And I'm so grateful that you've been on this journey with us, and now that we're called Mindshift and we're on this new journey, and we've been talking about this podcast for the last few years, and getting to do it is an absolute joy and gift. Like the fact that this is part of our job and what we get to do is just amazing and amazing. But I want you guys to all know that, you know, we're grateful for you. If you guys can take a second and subscribe to the YouTube, you can go to earlmcmanus.com/YouTube. You can go to our Instagram, Mindshift Pod. You can rate and review on Spotify and Apple Music, and just let us know you're out there listening. And if you want to watch the pod, you can go on YouTube as well. And we will see you guys next Friday, the new episode of Mindshift.
Take care, guys.
Bye, guys.